overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week. Many blessings to you.
And so when we walked in the sanctuary, Bob was playing Claire de Lune. And there was a lot of noise, a lot of talking, a lot of celebrating friendships. And then all of a sudden, there was a stillness that fell over the crowd. And it's as if everyone fell into the music. And it wasn't so much the notes that were played, but the space in between the notes. Those beautiful pregnant pauses where Bob would hold a note and then we'd fall into the next rhapsody of music. And there's this ability to experience the beauty of the moment that's always courting us. It was Ram Dass that said, all of life is God in drag. Now we can laugh at that, but what if everything is this divine presence out picturing in form? It may be the two bugs on your rose bush that you flick off because you consider them a pest. Or this morning when I was walking the pug, I found a feather of a hawk by the side of the road that was so beautiful. The voice within said, bring this to Gigi, she loves feathers. And I thought, where did that voice come from? And then I began to realize it didn't come from my mind. It came from life itself. And so then we step back out of the me person and we step out of the thought patterns. And where it says in Science of Mind, change your thinking, change your life. Well, it has nothing to do with thoughts. And it has nothing to do with the thinker. Because when you step out of the one who's thinking, well, then where are you? Well, then you're in that spacious field of awareness that is our true nature, a field of divine love that precedes all thought patterns, a divine love that has no me that's in control. I was listening to Stephen Jenkinson from Canada, and he talked about the Serenity Prayer as a control freak's prayer. It's all about controlling what I can't control and the wisdom not. And he says, the antidote to the Serenity Prayer is grief. And I had to listen deeply, not with my mind, not with the analytical part that wants to decipher and pick apart a thought pattern, but to surrender to something that is free. That goes beyond thoughts, goes beyond the identification of the one who remembers and forgets, because there's still someone remembering and someone forgetting. And what if we transcend all of that in one holy instant, by inheriting the now moment? This is the moment the Lord has made, it says in the Bible. Rejoice and be glad in it. And so what if in that moment some dark things start to arise, maybe some sadness? And instead of pushing the sadness or the grief away, we open to the grief. We open to the confusion. We open to the uncertainty. And then we're free. Our lovely little mind wants to have conclusions. It wants to have control. It wants to fix the world. But there's something that's free of all of that. And that's what we come here to experience every moment. And so I invite you to surrender into this sacred now moment. And when you're ready, open your eyes. Look around at your own self. Ram Dass's seminal work was called Be Here Now. It changed the whole world. I can remember reading that book when I was a young student of truth. To be here now. And you know what happens when you are fully present in the present moment, inhabiting the now? The past dissolves, because it's just the history or herstory. The future dissolves, because so often what the future is a projection of something that we, a goal that we have, someday I will. And what if you don't live on someday I'll? You live in the present moment awareness. Well, then everything comes up to be met. A friend of mine is reading a book on Carl Jung, and what I loved about Jung was he says, we're here to make the unconscious conscious. Well, what's going on in that unconscious? Well, that is the question, isn't it? What's operating subliminally in your life that's creating the suffering? You know, and so much of what we do in science of mind is to learn to listen deeply to the messages that the body's giving us. Now, that's the physical body. The body doesn't lie. If it's making you sick to your stomach when you drive home, maybe there's something wrong at home. Or if you're getting sick to your stomach when you go to the workplace, maybe you need to listen to your body. I've had that. Anybody been in a relationship that was making you ill? And you stay in it as long as you can until you decide, you know what? I'm going to choose to let go of the identification with that. And then, paradoxically, you've set yourself free and you've set the other person free, but it took you however long it took you in order to reach that conclusion. My Zen calendar yesterday and today was so right on, I had to bring it, tore it off the calendar. Yesterday, it was Sixin Wuxi, whoever that is, probably some Zen guy. And he says, investigate what's right under your feet, contemplate it, get to the bottom of it, and then ask yourself, what is the truth of it? So whatever life is giving you in this moment, like for me, it was the feather on the road. For Jody, it was a dog fight. Or maybe some poop in the bed. That's just an inside joke. Sometimes life gives you these experiences that are comfortable or uncomfortable, and we get to say, what is the truth of it? I was sharing with Jody that I brought Pug, Humphrey the Pug, to class and to satsang on Wednesday. Now, every Wednesday morning, my three dogs would stand by the back door because they knew they were going to have their sangha, their pack. And Bert and Speck loved the pack. Humphrey would run around because he liked attention, but he wasn't so much into it. Well, now lately, because Bert and Speck have transitioned, part of them exists within the pug. And it's really strange. Bert dug a hole in the carpet in the dining room. Jody knows that. And it was his little nest. We kept the hole in the carpet. We put another rug over the hole. Now the pug decides to go and sleep on the hole in the dining room that Bert dug. Now, I'm not saying that Bert's in Humphrey, but that's where he's sleeping, on Bert's hole. So Humphrey came to satsang in class. I took him out of his buggy. And the first thing he did was, like baby Speck, he tuned in to who needed some help. And my beloved friend Hal, who's had a herniated disc, just like Humphrey, he's in so much pain. And he comes, you can feel his pain body. Well, who do you think tuned into the pain body but Humphrey the pug? And he waddles all the way across the circle, and he sits right at the feet of Hal. And Hal, you could feel his pain, and Hal reaches over, and he's rubbing. He says, what's that bump on Humphrey's head? I said, that's his smart bump. He went, oh, okay. And so he's rubbing the smart bump on Humphrey's head. And I said, so Hal, on a scale of 1 to 10, how bad is the pain right now? He said, well, it was a 10, but ever since I've been stroking Humphrey, the pain went away. I said, well, is that the magic of love when a pug waddles over? And they met in that field of just a connection, that heart connection. I'm never blown away when that happens. And so I just looked at him and I thought, is that baby Speck showing up for satsang? And then, of course, at nighttime, he was the same thing. He was the ambassador of love, work in the room. I've never seen him do that before. And at the very end of the satsang, he lay in the center of the circle, and I did a closing prayer. And I heard myself go into this place of, and now let's all focus on the peace and the serenity of the pug. I thought I would never say something like that, knowing that pug spelled backwards is gup. And I'm thinking, what is operating through David right now? I was thinking dog spelled backward is God, but it came up pug spelled backward is gup. And then, you know, I realized the universe has a sense of humor. And you show up for the moment and life gives you these strange things. So this morning, it was Marcus Aurelius, the enlightened emperor of Rome, who coexisted around the time of Jesus. So here's Marcus Aurelius. He says, the first rule in life is to keep an untroubled spirit. Well, what do you think that means, Jody Rutenberg, to keep an untroubled spirit? Wow. All this stuff's going on the planet. You know, there's mass shootings. There's hearings on January 6th. Could we keep that serenity place within us with all of this noise going on around us? And it's justifiable because the voice of humanity is speaking. Trey said, am I going to wear this uniform for Ukraine every Sunday? I said, I made an agreement. Until the Ukrainian thing is some kind of resolution, I'm going to put them on my heart. And so he says, first rule, keep this untroubled spirit. And then the second rule is to look things right in the face and to know them for what they are. Know them for what they are, not what you want them to be. So could you, I love Maya Angelou, when someone shows you who they are, believe them. So could we be looking at the world and seeing its dysfunction? Could we see its shadow? Someone was telling me the other day, we did the cleanup 5 points thing, and someone said someone was in their truck and they pulled their gun out and shot somebody else in another truck. Now, the fact that we go around carrying guns in our vehicles and there's road rage out there, we get someone who doesn't please us, we pull our route, you know, this has got to stop. We don't need to be killing one another. It was Matthew Fox that said, we need a new creation story for humanity. And he says, the old creation story that most of you know, it's the second book of Genesis, where God created man, and then from the second rib, he created woman. And then the woman led man astray, listening to a snake. And so we've had the fall of man in the second book of Genesis. And that became the whole criteria for a path of spirituality where we had to have the blood of Jesus to save us from our sins. Well, what if we got rid of that creation story and we went to the first book of Genesis, Matthew Fox says, when God said, this is good and this is good and this is good, and it's all God. On the first day, God said, let there be light, which was the Shekinah, the light within. I loved what Raul said in our class the other day. He says, the speed of light is much faster than the speed of sound. So when you come into my presence, I see your light first. And then when you speak, I hear where you're really from. No, kind of like that. And so could we see the light in each other and call it forth? Last Sunday, I talked about calling it in. What is the it? That's the first step of treatment, the recognition that there is one life, one power, one presence. And that's what we are. And so when we start from the get-go through a recognition that all there is this presence revealing itself, this invisible spirit, well, then the question is, the second is to look things in the face and know them for what they are. This too is good. This too is for God. And in this holy now, because I'm entering into the now moment, I demand to see the blessing. And so wherever I am, if it's at a butterfly release, I demand to see the blessing. If it's at a situation where a couple are having a disagreement with each other, I try to be that space that doesn't pick sides, but realizes that there is a place that has no disagreement. Could we sleuth-like find that still place and see what it wants to offer us? So I love to live in the question. It's my favorite place to be. And this month, I'm going to ask the question, how are we making our way in the world? How are we making our way in the world? Now, that's a question that you get to live with. And I'm not going to give you an answer, but I'll play with it. Because you remember Jesus said to be like a child if you would enter the kingdom? We've gotten it wrong. And Anastasia understands this. You know, when we were little kids, we were setting goals. And God knows I set every goal. You know, I wanted to graduate from high school, first in my class, did that. Wanted to go to college, got all these degrees, did that. I went back, got another degree. All these goals, set the goals, didn't really mean anything because I hadn't really gone within and said, who am I? Who's achieving all these goals? Well, that's the overachiever, you know? AR, that's Jody refers to him as, we know who AR is. Always wanting to be perfect, always wanting the world's approval, until that person isn't running the show anymore. And I get to say, well, who am I then? And what if I am, as Ernest Holmes would say, the totality of possibility that's waking up in a human form? What if I'm a jubilant and beholden spirit that wasn't meant to set goals, but was meant to be a free spirit? And that's why I chose to do this lovely book, Ordinary Freedom, because our true nature is free. And you know, it's so funny. This morning I pulled out Jeff Foster And I love it when the universe spins your truth, because it isn't the way you think it is. You know, it isn't about changing your thinking or changing your life. Because you know why? There is no thinker. This is what Jeff Foster says. He says, "This is one of the many illusions that we hold, that we are the thinkers of our thoughts. The reality is that thoughts simply appear in a vast silence, and that's what you are, is that vast silence. It's only another thought that says, well, I thought that thought today. Well, what if there is no thinker behind the thought? It's kind of fun to play that game, isn't it? So he says, so now we appear to have two things. There is a thought, and there is a me who has the thought. There is the thinker, and the thing, and there is the thought. But this is an assumption, and it's nothing more," says Jeff Foster, "because in reality, you never experience this split between the thinker and the thought. You simply find thoughts that arise. They come in into what you are. There is no thinker that thinks a thought. There is simply a thought that appears now. And then this thought says, well, I'm the thinker, is the only thought that you might have in that moment. And this is the kicker. This is the circle. He says, this is the essence of what true meditation is, to simply relax back into that vast open spaciousness in which thoughts come and go, and notice that thoughts are not yours and you don't take them personally. It's just a thought that arises. Well, I like this. Well, I don't like that. Well, I prefer this or I don't prefer that. Well, it's a sunny day. Maybe it's going to be hot. Well, it's a nice rainy day. Maybe it's going to be cool. What if all these thoughts aren't real? And then you find yourself, through a simple practice of stopping, hanging out in nothingness, in presence, in awareness. And then if you're lucky enough to have a pug in your world who doesn't really think a lot of thoughts, you look at him and you think, there's nothing going on there. And you go, yup, that's it. That's freedom. That's what it looks like. Last Sunday, I mentioned that there was a tour of the gardens, the hidden gardens of Old Town. And they hadn't had it in 3 years. So we put the buggy in his stroller, and we decided to have the adventure in the gardens, only to realize that it was really hot and it was full sun. And a black pug in full sun was in his little buggy. And then I didn't realize that when you walk into gardens, a lot of them have that gravel, and the wheels of the buggy got mired in the gravel, and I wasn't having a fluidic woo-wee moment. I was having a struggle with a and a buggy that was stuck and people everywhere around. Now, you know, my husband suffers from a disease called Asperger's. He's very proud of that, which means he doesn't like people. So between him trying to avoid people, me managing the pug and the thing, I finally said to this host of this thing, do you have any water for a thirsty pug? So before you know it, we get a little bowl, we pour the thing. He only got the best water, and he wouldn't drink it. So I'm sitting there holding the water for the pug, thinking, I'm not really succeeding at this day. And then a man comes over, total stranger, and Jody would appreciate this. He looks at me and he says, that's the ugliest dog I ever saw. And I said, I don't even know who you are. And all of a sudden, you're making such a nice comment about my little pug in the stroller. I turned to Trey, I said, it's time to go. And so, without seeing all the gardens, we have the memory of the few that we saw. We found ourselves setting ourselves free of an experience that wasn't what we had thought it would be. Now, we ran into some beautiful people, and they were celebrating that adventure with us. And so, isn't it nice to know that when a situation doesn't serve you, you can choose to leave it? And when it serves you really well, you can enter into it with a full-hearted commitment. And we are always at choice point. Now, that's one of the basic teachings of Science of Mind. It says right there in the Science of Mind text, Tia, who's reading the text over again, it says, you cannot live a choiceless life. In every moment, you're making a choice. So you can choose to operate from a place called victimhood, from reactiveness, from opinion and conclusions. And you know, one of the very first lessons I learned in this teaching was there are no victims, there are only volunteers. So are you signing up for victimhood in life? Or are you realizing that I can choose not to hang out in limited thoughts, in painful memories, in a narrative where I'm the one who is somehow a victim of the world? Because if I'm going to play the role of victim, I'm going to need a victimizer out there. Well, what if the only enemy, you know, there's that wonderful saying, I have found the enemy and the enemy is me. And so you begin to look at the inner enemy, not as something that's wrong, but as an ally. You befriend the part of you that you've somehow exiled. And then in the midst of the darkness, you find the light. In the midst of the contraction, you find the freedom. And this is an ongoing dance that never ends throughout life. Isn't that amazing? So then when mothers come into our world, and I love mother. My mother was a living saint, but she also had a PhD in codependency. And I've, you know, been on the phone with my two sisters, and I realized my mother lives in them. And my mother's whole mantra was, you got to fix the world. You got to fix people whose lives are suffering. And I learned through the school of hard knocks, you can't fix somebody else. They have to kind of want to claim their inner wholeness themselves. So what if the wholeness that we seek is right there waiting for us to identify? It's not something that you achieve through all your hard efforts, because it says in Sufism, all your efforts won't get you to the first way station. So it's not about forcing yourself into a new idea of yourself, but surrendering to one that's already existing. It's already there. You're already free. You're already home. It has nothing to do with your thoughts. Well, what should I do with my thoughts then? I said, just observe them. They arise. Where do they come from, TL? Well, I don't know. There's some real stinking thinking that's coming up in my thoughts. And then, do you want to hear what I have to think? And I'd say, not really, because I have my own thoughts that I don't want to think. So could we play in that realm of how are we going to navigate? So the first Sunday I talked about calling it in. We're calling in the silence. We're calling in the peace. We're calling in the blessing of the universe. This too is good. This too is for God. And then you're making a demand on the universe. I demand to see the blessing. Could we know that there's a blessing for our country by facing the shadow? There's a lot of shadow in America. My friend in Canada said, what's with you down there? He says, you've got more guns than you got people. And I said, I know. I said, aren't you glad that you Canadians don't have as many guns? He says, I'd been dead a long time ago with all my boyfriends. He says, they'd have shot me dead. And I said, probably so. But he said, thank God you don't have them up there in Canada. You don't have to worry about it. And so could we let what's going on wake us up? Isn't it time to wake up as a species? You know? Yeah. My little husband is already searching for an escape route if things should get worse in America. And he Googles up gay-friendly countries in the world. He's convinced that Portugal is the place that's the most friendly. He's afraid that we're going to go back to the Dark Ages and start having laws against certain people. Anybody remember that? Or am I the only one? And or we won't. Our better angels might start happening in this world. What do you think? We're going to start caring for one another, recognizing that it's all sacred. And I'm teaching this wonderful class called Ordinary Freedom. And John Burney talks about the moment as something that we get to attend. He calls it attending the moment. Not controlling the moment, attending it. Now, life is just made out of moments. You know, you wake up in the morning and you have a moment. I usually wake up and there's a pug lying next to me and he's snoring and he loves to cuddle. And you know, and then when I put the coverlets over him, when I get out of bed, he's even more cozy. And then he lays in bed and waits for someone to come and cuddle with him. And you know, it's hard to get up at 5 a.m. and do your thing when you've got a little warm pug waiting for you to cuddle back in the bed. So I always sneak back and get an extra little warm. And then I leave. And of course, he doesn't like to be left. So he sits on the edge of the bed and he barks until I pick him up and carry him out. I'm attending to the moment. So he says, try out just being an attendant to your life. It was Llewellyn that said, your attention is your most valuable possession. It's all about your attitude. Do you have a good attitude toward life? Are you seeing this life as a blessing? Oh, are we attending to this moment? You're sitting here in this circle. Are you planning some future idea? Are you really fully here right now, open to the grace of this transmission? Because I'm opening to the grace of transmission. It's all transmission. There's something that's transmitting itself. Well, what is it? Yeah, I think it's love. Next week, I'm going to explore the idea of falling in love with the world, because if it's all you, the world is falling in love with itself. So it all comes back to the simple idea of love. And then how are you going to make your way in the world if you know what you are as love? It's got to be so much bigger. Try out being the attendant. So rather than trying or doing something in this moment, you simply are tending to this moment.
Well, this is the moment you've been given, Jody. You get to attend to it.
She told me that she was in the boat the other day and there was two dragonflies making love on her knee. I says, did you flick them off? She says, no, I watched them in awe and wonder. How beautiful it is. Now, that's what I would have done, Miss Tia. Just watch the dragonflies. Yeah, tending the moment. You're taking care of each moment. You're following this moment rather than trying to lead the moment. And he says, this is what I call tending to and not controlling. This is what I call tending to clair de lune and not feeling I have to control the music. So clair de lune will find a way through my fingers and through the instrument into the room if I can surrender enough of the idea that I'm the one that's the doer. This is the shift. It is surrender. It is submission. It is the strength of patience, Terry boy. The strength of patience. It is the courage to simply listen. And in that, there's a freedom and an effortlessness in being simply an attendant to the present moment. You're being attentive to the present moment. You're just taking care of what needs to be taken care of right now. Is it so simple, you suppose? You know, I was sharing with Jody when I would come downstairs at the end of Bert's life. It was about a year ago because he transitioned on July 8th. And in June, he got so compromised that he couldn't hold his bladder all night long. And so around 2 a.m, he occasionally would have an accident. And he was so prideful. I'd take him out and I told him, it's okay. You don't have to be embarrassed. I'd wash him down, clean his bed. And so I learned that to just be attentive, I'd get up at 2 a.m. and he and I would go out. And it's just tending to the moment. Suzuki Roshi said, your attitude is everything. And I think what he means here is, what is the quality of your intention? Your attitude is everything. I felt so privileged to be in service to Bert. It was just an honor, helping him up and down those steps. I know we probably kept him here longer than he needed to be, but it was just perfect. And so you're attending to moments. He says, relax. As a prerequisite for transformation, in stillness, the energy can really begin to channel and move, and gradually it can dissolve all the blocks in the system. Well, what he's saying is all you need to do is move into that stillness. And in that stillness, the blocks aren't real. We see them for what they are. Someone would say to John Burney, well, I feel like there's a wall in my way. He says, become the wall. I feel anxious. He said, become the anxiety. And so whatever there is that arises, that's very Jungian, right in the middle of that is freedom. So it's not about having the perfect life and not having that dysfunctional life. Right in the middle of that darkness, that dysfunction, that contraction is the freedom. And then he says, everything in life is a doorway to liberation. That's why Jesus would say, love your enemy and do good to those that irritate you and push your buttons. They're coming here to set you free. They're the doorway. Whoa, you mean they don't have to be my friend, Ari? No, they could be your perceived enemy, and it's your own projection onto them that you're liberating yourself from. It's all an inside job, every bit of it. There's no outside. He goes on to say, attending to your own experience is the name of the game. In the meantime, you find out how to take care of your life, how to meet each moment as the moment presents itself. Another way to think of this is taking care of each moment. How am I taking care of this moment? And he says, flexibility of perspective is extremely important. Flexibility of perspective. In other words, you really don't have a clue. In one of the chapters here, these are all satsangs, he says, your mind is the last to get it. All of you engineers out there, you super smart cerebral types, you ain't going to get it with the brain. It's going to be discovered with something so much more deep and intimate within yourself. Well, what is that? Well, that's what you get to discover. It's the self within the self. It's the knower that's within the one who thinks he has all the ideas. It's the one who says, I don't really know, but there's something greater than me that does. Could I defer to that? You know, people come to me with all these garden questions, and you know what I've learned with the garden, having done it for so many years? The garden will tell you. Just have communion with the garden. It will show you what it wants, what it needs. And then we're in, just like you attend to the moment with yourself, you attend to the garden in the sacred moment. I love the fact that Gigi and Raul brought Josie over here, which is Napoleon's new little consort. I called her Josephine, but Raul said it's really Josie because she's tiny and he's big. And they're such teachers for me because they have this relationship. Is he dominant because he's huge and she's little? I think she runs the roost in that pond. She swims circles around him. And all of a sudden, he was so stoic and so in his ways, and now he's becoming almost playful. I see the two of them having fun in there. Is it possible that they could be my gurus, that they're showing me the way? A little fish with a big fish? Am I the big fish who thinks I've got all the answers? Or am I the little fish of possibility that's swimming in around in the... You know, it makes you think twice. So start with wherever you are and whatever is presence. And in that moment, you start to tend the moment, whatever life is bringing you. Well, isn't that liberating? Whatever life shows you. I watched the hearings. I think it was Thursday night or Tuesday night, whatever the night the hearings were. And as painful as it was to watch that insurrection that took place, I let myself open to have a full experience, not as a critic, but as someone who wants to heal. And you know, they talk about PTSD. The only way to heal one of those traumas is that you enter into it. Even listening to the woman who described the blood and all that sort of stuff. And as much as I try to avoid anything that's uncomfortable, by the willingness to just meet it, like he's saying, whatever arises, and not turn away, has then the ability to hopefully say what is acceptable. There's that choice point again. What am I going to choose to call acceptable? I personally don't want anybody carrying guns into the church on Sunday mornings, because I know I probably would be the target, because I know I tend to say things that sometimes might be controversial, and it would... But you know, my teacher Kennedy used to say, you're not here to comfort the afflicted, you're here to afflict the comfortable. So sometimes, and he says, and if you're not making people uncomfortable, you're probably not doing your job. Now, what is he trying to say there? Sometimes we have to speak the truth to ignorance. But he also said, ignorance is temporary and stupid is forever. So you know when you're dealing with stupid and you know when you're dealing with ignorance. So could we hopefully evolve as a species? And that's my big passion in ministry, because if we don't, we're doomed to perish. You know, someone shared with me that they're seeking counseling from a Baptist minister up here, and they asked my counsel, how would you say that I should respond to the minister that would say, put Jesus in your marriage? And I said to him, well, I would probably say, leave Jesus out of it. Jesus has suffered enough. You don't need to put him in the middle of it. And, you know, well, and that's that sense of humor. If you can have a little bit of sense of humor, then you have the capacity to set yourself free. So what if life is always showing us where we are? And it's so funny, my little sister, she went into the rescue mode. Remember, we had the same codependent mother. And her big thing was she was going to rescue my twin sister in Idaho. So she drove 8 hours over. She scooped her up and brought her back home. They created a room for her, TV, everything. My brother-in-law is very quiet, goes along with what his wife says. You know, there's that mantra in a marriage, would you rather be right or happy? If you want to be happy, let the wife lead the way. So my little sister was leading the way, and he finally informed her when the plan didn't work out. He said, honey, he said, it would have killed me if your sister had moved in, but I didn't dare tell you that. So it didn't work out. They drove her back to Idaho. And guess what? It's unfolding in a way that they couldn't have imagined. It wasn't about fixing it. It wasn't about molding it into some idea, some plan that she had, but it was about letting it unfold in a way that we couldn't even have imagined. Is my twin sister slightly certifiable? Yes, she's crazy as a loon, but she likes her crazy loon world. And so we let her have her world, and she's managing it, and it's family. You know, don't you wonder what the role of family members are? Because I'm the oldest brother now, and they call me Scott. Scott, you need to do something. That's my mother's voice, Jody. Scott, you need to do something. I hear it, Mom. I need to do something. I need to fix this family that has never been able to be fixed. And how do I fix it? Well, I say the same thing I always do. You can choose to not identify with the problem. This is the problem, and this is my problem, until it's not your problem. Well, you mean you can just put the problem down? Yeah, and then what's the problem? Well, then the problem isn't real. It's some creation that we've identified with that we no longer identify with. Well, is it that simple? Well, I think maybe it is, Sylvia. What do you think? You can touch the sea in the sky. Mark Nepo talks about that wonderful question, how are we going to make our way? In a really beautiful way that I thought I would share with you. I think I'm good. This is how we make our way, by caring, but wait a second. Oh, here it is. He said, I have to say that I keep making my way by following the aliveness wherever I can find it and wherever life finds me. It was David White that said in his beautiful poem, The House of Belonging, he says, anyone and anything that doesn't bring me alive is too small for me. So what if we're all striving for that energy of aliveness, those two dragonflies were aliveness itself. Could we see the aliveness as what we are? And that it doesn't have goals, that it doesn't have preferences. It's just the aliveness of spirit. And he says, whatever, because in moments of aliveness, I see more and I take more in. So could we cultivate this aliveness? Because when touched by life, either softly or harshly, I will feel a place in me that is a larger order of being, the way that a knot is tugged in one corner of a net that pulls the other net. That's why the Sangha is so powerful, because we all affect one another. Jody was talking about a dogfight this morning, and I don't even know what the dogfight was all about, but I felt like I was in the dogfight with her. So as she's sharing this experience, I'm in the experience with her because we're connected. We're all connected. See, this is the sensation of oneness. And feeling enough of those tugs in life, in the depths of my being, I am then convinced that there is no other dream as vital as this one life sustaining itself in an unscripted moments of aliveness, and we're here to enter those moments of aliveness. Wow. Not as the script, not as the dream that someone has, because it's all a dream, and then we're all in the same life together.
What do you mean there's only one life here? Like Ernest Holmes says, and we're all living from that one life. And it seems like we're all the butterfly release. Every one of you is in a little envelope.
And this is life. And I've got your little life in this envelope, and I'm going to open the flap, and I'm going to let you all be free. Now, you only have a short period of time to mate, to give birth, and to die.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. How much time do we have, Nancy? Oh, maybe 3 days.
Well, 3 days is just fine. And then you find the aliveness of a butterfly is sufficient. Wow. He says, life only wants to be alive. The way that fire only wants to burn. And so we awaken, and we find each other, and we find love. There could be no finer destiny than that. We just wake up, and we discover what we are as love, and we start falling in love with the world. And then everything becomes an extension of yourself. Does that feel good for you, Ari? It's all you. And then you're falling in love with butterflies and lightning bugs. I have a thing for lightning bugs. I find them just purely magical. And I would come home from class, and I would go into the garden, and literally all these lightning bugs were there. And then I'd hear that machine driving down the street, and they're spraying for the mosquitoes. And I'm saying, don't you realize that you're spraying for the mosquitoes, but you're probably going to affect my lightning bugs? And then there's the narrative in the mind. And then I have to say, all is well all the time, and the lightning bugs will find a way in this world, or they won't. And it's only my reaction to that I'm experiencing. Is that what life's all about, Gene? Is am I reacting or am I not? I think so. In class, I had this little Zen calendar called Seize the Day, and I think I used it last week. Seize the day doesn't mean that you grab the moment and you grab life and you try to devour it. Seize the day, carpe diem, is you pluck life like you would pluck a rare gardenia. And you look at the fragility of that gardenia and you smell the gardenia and you realize that it only has a short period of time to be experienced. And then what if we are a gardenia in life, that you're not separate from the gardenia? You know, and I see you come into this space and I get to drink from the fragrance of your soul. We have a sign in our classroom over there. I love it. It says, silence is your perfume. Isn't that the most evocative phrase to live with? Silence is your perfume, Michael. When he walks in here with his light, it's so shimmering. And then he has that beautiful silence underneath that overly active mind of his. But when the mind isn't kicking in, there is this beautiful, warm place that we all have in common. Now, do we just need the babies to experience it? I would say we can find it in all life. Not just the innocent ones that are so pure with their original innocence. Did you notice I didn't say original sin? With their original innocence. And what if life is an original blessing? And that once we turn the tables in the temple like Jesus did, and we have a whole different way of looking at life, then life begins to change. Oh my God, we're here to expand and to be free and to experience the oneness with everything. And not a superiority as a species or even as anything. That could we be the humble little dragonfly on Jody's knee? ready to show her how to lead the way. I love the Algonquin Indians. They say to nature, teach me and show me the way. To the teacher, to the stream, teach me and show me the way. To the little bugs on the rosebush, teach me and show me the way. It's not Tia's rosebush, it's your rosebush. And then you realize, I don't own anything. And then you begin to let go of everything that you clung to, and in letting go of beliefs, relationships, identities, labels, concepts, it all sets us free to be what? Everything and nothing.
Well, I think that's the time for the bell, don't you, Raul? Everything and nothing?
You know, Bert has a way of showing up in me because he lives in me. My little sister, she lost her little dog, Sam. He was a little golden retriever, and he was so close to her. Sam was one of those little dogs that loved to swim and chase twigs, and he saw a tree floating down the Willamette River in Oregon, and Sam leaped into this. It was winter time. He was going after the tree that was going down the river, and my little sister, to her credit, leaped in the water, swam out, scooped up Sam, swam back, and the people on the bridge were cheering the woman who saved the dog. And she said, Sam and I had this connection, kind of like I have with my pets too, and she said to me, Scott, she said, Sam came to me in the dream. He was running down the beach. And she said, two nights going, Sam's been running down the beach coming to me. She says, do you think Sam is still here with me? And I said, you know I do. Where else would he be? He came to let you know that he's still here with you. So when Bert shows up, it's the same kind of thing, like baby coming to class, waddling around. Raul, you want to ring the bell? You know, this bell is reflective of Thich Nhat Hanh. In the Buddhist practice, they would ring the bell. They called it the mindfulness bell for a reason. Because the bell was an instrument of stopping, of letting in the presence that's already there. Sometimes we close our hearts and our minds to the presence. But what we are is presence. This presence of love, this presence of light, this presence of peace, this overwhelming truth that goes beyond all facts and conclusions. And so the simple act of ringing a bell opens a space in us that longs to be revealed. And we just stop long enough to know that it's always there. This is tending to the moment. Throughout your day, I would give you the gift of just stopping. If you see a feather on the side of the road, just stop and let the feather take you into its beauty. If you're walking through the garden and you see two robins making love on the path, you could be offended by it, or you could just stop long enough and smile that spring has come back into the garden and love is in the air. Everywhere you look around, love is in the air. With every bug and every bird. And then you begin to smile to this beautiful dance of life. And you notice if you stop that the butterflies are drinking the nectar from the flowers. And the flowers are opening their petals to the bees and the butterflies so they can interspirit. And then you experience yourself as a butterfly drinking from the flowers of life. And you open your heart and you feel the flower within your heart offering its love to anyone who wants to drink from the blossom of your own heart. And you see the interconnectedness of all of it, that it's all showing us the way. And like the Algonquin Indians, you say to the butterfly and the flower, teach me and show me the way. And basically nature is saying, just be here now. This is the moment that life has given you. This is the aliveness that we get to experience with this breath. Not tomorrow's breath, not yesterday's breath, but this breath. And so as the breath becomes conscious, we allow it to inhale us, and then we allow it to exhale us through us. And we realize that we're not breathing any more than we're thinking. The breath is breathing us. Beloved Bob is going to come up, and he's going to lead us in a closing song in a few minutes. But before that, I'd like you to join with me in our heart salutation by placing your hand on this presence within you and all around you, inheriting this sacred moment, and saying to the presence, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you. I love you. You are the light of the one waking up. Realizing your oneness with all as your own self, smiling, interspiriting, attending the moment with gentleness, mindfulness, and joy. With cheerful expectancy, we open our eyes, we open our hearts, and we make a circle as we come together in a song.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org. To create a brand new